so much going on in my life and in my head that it's hard to focus sometimes and be present. On the podcast this week, a lot of introspection being back in LA, potentially a month or two away from trying to have a kid while still trying to date, and the first part of my interview with Ange, a dear friend whose friendship over the last few years has helped me understand and learn a lot about non-traditional relationships. It's my unconventional life. Sipping on the word. I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is My Unconventional Life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way, it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? I've been watching a documentary series on Netflix called The Kindness Diaries. It's about a former stockbroker who gave it all up to lead a more fulfilling life, who rides his motorbike around the world, relying solely on the kindness and generosity of strangers to provide him with food, gas, and shelter to continue on his journey. Then when he meets someone who shows him a lot of kindness and could really benefit from his help, he gives him the money to do it. I don't know if it's my age or thinking about having a kid, but I get so emotional, like so easily when I'm watching it, like on the verge of tears. And of course, it's a cliche, but giving truly is a better gift than getting. Say that after a couple of pints of snakebite. So I've been reading a book on parenting now called Brain Rules for Baby. It's about how to best raise a kid to help their brain develop from conception to 5 years old when most of the hard wiring is done. It really is insightful and educational, but it has brought up a few potential issues between Eri and I about how we'd raise kids. Now, I don't think there are any two people on earth who see anything with the complexity of raising a kid the exact same way. So the bigger issue, I think, perhaps, is how you discuss and resolve those slight conflicts. And it made me think a lot about my own upbringing and emotions too, and also how the emotional skills and behaviours that we're trying to encourage in children oftentimes aren't even there in adults. But I don't see that in a fatalistic way, because the human brain has been shown to be quite neuroplastic, which means basically that it can change its hard wiring in certain situations, derived, I assume, from having to adapt to changes throughout our evolutionary history. So I think anyone can learn and adapt their brain to better, healthier ways of thinking and acting. I've been hanging out with Eri again, of course. We hung out with Rachel this past week, and she had a look over our 4-page contract. We're debating adding something about the potential of having a second kid, either together or with someone else. But the problem is, there's so many factors that we can't possibly know right now that it's hard to express anything of value in a written contract. I've started the fertility meds and come off the testosterone cream. I don't feel terribly different, to be honest. But Eri has told me that I should be ejaculating every couple of days to have the best quality sperm. Now, perhaps this isn't something you want to hear about, but it's been a long time since I've had the desire to do it that much. Or at all, really. I mean, it's usually way more of a perfunctory thing. Cleaning the tubes, so to speak. So it's an odd thought to have to do it when you really don't feel like it, you know what I mean? And then afterwards, I'm pretty much useless. Like I've been hit with a tranquilizer dart and I stagger around like a stunned, drunk, grizzly bear. Okay, maybe that's not an easily accessible analogy for most people. In fact, I don't know why it came to me. Anyway, so I've finished reading Models, Mark Manson's book on dating, and it really has helped me see so clearly what I've been doing wrong for most of my adult life in terms of attracting girls that I'm attracted to. He says that two of the most important things that women are attracted to in men are non-neediness and vulnerability. Now, this needs some explaining because the words themselves really aren't enough. Neediness basically means to be more invested in what someone else thinks about you than how you view yourself and your values. I guess you could use the term self-esteem. Vulnerability then, I guess, stems from non-neediness. It's the ability and willingness to put yourself out there to be rejected and judged because you're secure enough in yourself. This then leads to the notion, not that you want to sleep with as many girls as you can to fill some gap in your psychological makeup, but that you want to screen and find the high quality people who will truly add to your life as you add to theirs. And when I think of guys who date a lot of girls, and by date, I mean fuck, which I should add isn't my goal, so perhaps what I really mean is guys who attract a lot of girls. These guys are never overly concerned with what any specific girl thinks of them or fearful of being rejected. That's certainly admirable. So like I said, in reading all this, I could clearly see how poor my dating strategies have been and why people I'm not attracted to, who therefore don't see that side of me, can't understand why I've had the problems that I have in the past. From a young age, being fearful of rejection, of course, and not wanting to be that overtly sexual, creepy guy, I always tried to be the non-sexual, nice guy. But this polarizes girls to only seeing you as a friend. You see, when girls meet you, according to Manson, they're usually neutral, but will be polarized one way or the other very quickly. And so if you don't polarize them in a sexual direction, they will automatically go in the other direction. So clearly I was more invested in their opinion of me than my opinion of myself. Because I guess I always had this sense of sexuality being something to keep hidden. Something that you shouldn't or perhaps felt you couldn't express openly. And so it was only when I had the green light and it was patently obvious that they liked me that I was willing to make a move. And so this meant that I missed out on a lot of opportunities to get to know potentially high quality people in a more intimate way. And I still see myself doing it now. But I'm learning more about myself every week. I remember an old woman telling me once that it takes most of your life to truly figure out who you are. And by the time you do, it's too late. Eckhart Tolle says, "Everything you need to be happy, you have right now, in this moment. You just need to accept your situation, whatever it is, as is." So, I've come up with a few new rules, or guidelines perhaps, for dating. Firstly, the two-date rule. So in first-wave pickup theory, there's something known as the three-second rule, which basically states if you see a girl you're interested in talking to, you have 3 seconds from the moment you see her to go up and say something to her. Because if you wait longer, you'll either second-guess yourself and balk, or you'll mess it up. I think the same thing applies to kissing a girl. I've gone on a number of dates that, for whatever reason, weren't overtly dates in the traditional sense. In those situations, you have 2 dates to either kiss the girl or the moment will pass. This is why I have so many platonic friendships with girls, perhaps. Other rules or guidelines that I've come up with: don't date anyone under 28. Most girls under that age aren't going to be interested in you anyway. 3 dates before sex. It just means you have a chance to see if you really like each other, if sleeping with them would be a wholly positive experience, if you're on the same page in terms of your expectations, and of course, being able to trust them and talk about sexual health. But to be honest, I'm feeling quite comfortable not dating a whole lot anyway, focusing instead on the relationships I have in my life already, sexual or not. I met up again with a girl that I really like, who I'd been on the date with from Plenty of Fish before I left, and I asked her about talking about her on here, and she said it was fine just to come up with a nickname. So when I first met her, I had her name saved as her name, then POF, as in Plenty of Fish. But after the first date, I changed it immediately to her name, then CAF, as in cute as fuck. So I think I'm going to go with that. Cute as fuck. That's perhaps somewhat of a misleadingly facile moniker, because there is so much more about her that I like. And we have an uncanny number of parallels in our lives. But nonetheless, her profile did say looking for a long-term relationship, whereas mine said looking to date nothing serious. So there was an element of anxiety about seeing her again, even though when we'd talked, she'd seemed very open-minded and non-judgmental about most things in life. Thankfully, as it turned out, she'd listened to a couple of episodes of this podcast and it didn't scare her away, and she said she really liked how open and vulnerable I was in it, which of course immediately harks back to Mark Manson's book again about being vulnerable. There's nothing so amazing as when someone likes you for who you are, and I guess that can't happen until you let someone see that. And it made me think about life in general, tied in with thoughts from the Kindness Diaries and the book on parenting. And a phrase came to me. Lead with love. Whenever you have something in front of you that might make you feel anxious or worried or fearful, always instead lead with love and kindness, because emotions are contagious. So anyway, I guess this podcast has another value besides its immediate intention, that being a great conduit to me. Well, maybe it's not 100% representative, because I met up with Andy again this week for a coffee, and we hadn't seen each other in a while, and we had a great time catching up and chatting and laughing, and she really opened my eyes to how the perception of me on the podcast might be different from that in real life. You know when someone tells you something about yourself, and when they do, it's as clear as day, when before you had no idea? See, she said that on the podcast, I come across as an intellectual and have deep, meaningful, philosophical discussions. And while I do that in real life too, I'm also really goofy and super affectionate, wanting to hug all the time in public. And I so am. I think I need to add that to my dating profile. I'm really thankful for her showing me that. Like I said, I've learned so much about myself over the last year or two. And sometimes, as I learn things, they can muddy the waters of feelings that I had before that can be a little unsettling. But as I said to Cute as Fuck this week, I don't know the details of where this all will take me, but I truly feel it will take me to a better place of understanding and peace in my life. Which leads me perfectly to my interview this week. Ange and I met a few years ago, a couple of months after I split up with my ex-girlfriend, and being in Knoxville, we had no idea if we'd ever see each other again. But a friendship developed, a lot of bumps in the road from issues with both of us learning how to openly communicate and relate, but because of it, we have a deep and wonderful friendship now. I saw her last month for the first time in over a year, and it may be another year or more before I see her again. But ours is one of a number of genuine friendships that truly add colour to my life. So this is Podcasting on the Fly. I'm in Sevierville, or Sevierville, depending on how you pronounce it, with one of my dearest old friends in the world, Little Miss Ange, or Mooney as I call her. I've been out here for a couple of days, been shown around, etc., etc., and we haven't seen each other in, God, over a year now. So how are you, Ange?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. We just had a lovely Indian.
We did. It was delicious.
Chicken sagwala.
I think I'm in a food coma almost right now.
Yeah. So we've had a lot of catching up to do. Like I said, I haven't seen you in, God, has it been a year?
A little over a year, yeah.
A little over a year now.
Last February, I think. Was it Nashville?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you saw me when I was out in Nashville. But we keep in contact, you know. We talk and text almost daily, you know, oftentimes. And that's great. It's great that we've managed to maintain our friendship, right?
Right.
Because we've known each other now, has it been 3 years, 3.5 years?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, we originally met at the comic convention, actually one of the first ones I ever went to, and I got booked because one of the guys who was helping on the show was a big fan of mine and said, I'll get you booked on this show, even though no one knows who you are. He didn't say that, but that's how I felt at the time. And then I met you and you were dressed up like Poison Ivy at the time.
Actually, no. The first day I met you, I was in a casual Ariel outfit because you made a comment about my Sebastian on my purse. You called him Terry.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he's a crab.
Yes.
Terry the crab.
Terry the crab.
Inside joke there for any wrestling fans.
And then the next day, it was Harley Quinn,
right.
And then Poison Ivy.
Exactly. There you go. My memory's never been the best, but I do remember that it was, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months after I'd split up with my ex-girlfriend, and I do remember before I came out, just thinking, never know, there's going to be girls there, and perhaps you might meet one that you like, that more importantly likes you, and so... You know, I was open to the idea, and in retrospect, I think some people may have looked at me connecting with someone in a sexual way so soon after splitting up with my ex-girlfriend as an indication of me perhaps not feeling as strongly for my ex-girlfriend or about the relationship. And I never saw it that way, because I've always said it's like people grieving about death. There's no right way to do it. For some people, it takes many, many years to get over a close person dying, and other people, for whatever reason, they just move on and they're okay with it. And I don't think that speaks to the level of investment that you had or the amount of love that you had for somebody. It's just different from different people.
Right.
So when I did meet you and we sort of hung out a little bit, had a few drinks as I was drinking back in those days.
And totally flirty the whole time.
Right. Well, you know.
I thought you were super smooth with your British accent over here.
Little did you know how dreadful I was.
But I know, right? I don't know what happened.
Yeah, so we didn't sleep together that night, for full disclosure. But over the next, 2 to 3 months, our sort of relationship developed. You came out to Los Angeles a couple of times.
No, actually, it started... Where was it? I think it was Charlotte was the next time I saw you. And then, it was Nashville. You came to Nashville, I think, for a weekend. And then we hung out for a little bit there.
Right.
And then I think maybe a month and a half later, I went to Charlotte to see you at that convention.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and then I moved out to California not long after that.
That's right. And then our sort of relationship developed. Now,
right.
See, I say relationship, and that's interesting because most people, when you use the term relationship, think of boyfriend and girlfriend. And we were never in that situation because, correct me if I'm wrong, but from the very beginning, I was very clear that I didn't want a committed, exclusive relationship, right?
Yeah, I don't know that we necessarily had that conversation within the first go-around of us hanging out. I think maybe it kind of led to that down the road, I think.
We had
maybe there's a little miscommunication somewhere down the line. Through text message, I think it was, maybe.
How so?
I think, didn't we have like some kind of little spat or something where maybe, maybe not a spat's the right word. Maybe we were getting confused, like I thought maybe you were wanting more or I was developing feelings or something like that. And then you're like, well, no.
Here's the interesting thing, because it's such a long time ago.
It was.
For me that I really don't remember the course of events that happened. I'm pretty certain... Very early on, even the first night, I would have mentioned that I just got out of a relationship and I didn't want anything serious. Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, I'd only met you at this convention
potentially
I was never going to see you again anyway.
I don't think it really came down to that at first. But we did stay in contact after that show.
Yeah.
And then that's where we figured out, you know, you're going to be here and I can come meet you since you're close by.
Right.
But I think maybe because of those initial meetings, and it started to get way friendlier, I think that's probably when we had that conversation of, by the way.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's what happened.
But that's interesting to me because I have this conversation with a lot of people in the polyamorous world who say, when you meet someone, throw it out there immediately. Like if you go on a date with someone before you even meet them, say, by the way, make sure you know I'm polyamorous. So it starts a conversation and you bring it up. And I always felt like it was somehow divisive to do that. I mean, let me ask you this. That first night where we sort of made out on the top of that pub, or even the second time that I saw you when you came out to Nashville or wherever it was, mm-hmm. if I'd have said, oh, let me stop you, Ange, before anything else happens, I need to tell you, I'm non-monogamous, I'm polyamorous. How would that have made you feel? Would you have gone, wait a second, that's a little bit early for me telling me this? Or
I think at that time when you would have told me, I might have had different feelings about it. Because
how do you think you would have felt?
I think back then, I mean, when I hear polyamory, you kind of think of like multiple wives and stuff like that.
Polygamy,
Yeah, polygamy, exactly. And I didn't really know all the details. I didn't know that there were different kinds of relationships. So you kind of opened that door for me in that sense. And I think, especially at that time, it was very new for you too. I don't even know if you necessarily knew about the terminology. So, but going back to your question, I think if you were to tell me something like that, I probably would have been a little freaked out. I think, and especially sometimes when you talk to people about, oh, I've been with all these different people, I think a lot of people think you're sleeping around as opposed to it being more loving and not like being like a man whore, I guess. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So
people's notion of non-monogamy is akin to essentially casual sex.
Right, right.
No one seems to link it to deep, meaningful, emotional relationships.
Right.
And when I think of our relationship, I think it's very deep and emotional.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's way more than just sex, you know?
Right.
And I get that. And I think you're right, because I was thinking earlier today about that time period, and I wouldn't have even known the term polyamory then.
Right.
Because it was only when I went to Vegas later in the year and I talked to Reba, who'd been mm-hmm. polyamorous back in the 80s, and I sort of explained this worldview that I'd had for a longest sort of time, like why, when you have deep feelings for someone in a sexual way, does it have to be exclusive? Why can't you have that feeling for more than one person?
Right.
And she said, oh, you can. You're polyamorous. And so it was only then that I even heard the term and started looking into it. So you've sort of seen that development in me along the time. And arguably our relationship has been that relationship that has developed through that.
I think so, for sure.
And of course, it hasn't been a smooth sailing. There's been some rough patches, as you said, with the explanation of things, me understanding what it is, you understanding exactly what it is, how it works, and the logistical issues of you living far away at first, and then when you lived in California, you still were, you know, an hour or two away, so it wasn't ideal. It wasn't like, okay, this could progress like any normal relationship would anyway, necessarily. So
I think in general, just with the whole learning about ourselves and what we want and don't want, I think that's kind of where some of the spots came from. But it's an interesting learning experience, that's for both of us, really, trying to figure out this whole world of dating, you know?
sure. And I think it's had great value to me, for sure, 100%. Being able to be open and honest with you has helped me a great deal, you know?
Oh, as for me too.
Right. I mean, the fact that we can have conversations and do have conversations about other people that we see and date, it seems...
It's freeing.
Freeing.
Yeah.
And healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I judge all of my other relationships by it.
Right.
But it's a good place to be, so...
I think so. I mean, every time I even kind of talk about the whole polyamorous thing with other people, I do talk about you quite often and just how you've helped me, even if it's something that I will never necessarily engage in myself.
Right.
It's still something that I would look for in relationships, somebody who's open and honest with me about everything like we have.
Right, which is not easy to find, for sure. Because now you've been essentially in an open relationship before in the past, but it wasn't...
Besides you, kind of, yeah.
Now... It wasn't at all what I would consider consensually non-monogamous, because you didn't really talk about other people that you were seeing.
Right.
And when you did, or when someone else found out that you'd been intimate, even in the very basic of senses with somebody else, there was a lot of jealousy and anger, and it really...
It was very weird.
Wasn't very a good weird. Mental experience in that regard, right?
No, not at all. It was very confusing. Especially because I could be one of those people who I can still care for somebody, but I know, oh, this is just sex. You know what I mean? It's not like I look into it as like, oh my gosh, we had sex and now he's my boyfriend. Like, I don't look at it like that. You know, I just enjoyed his company.
But everybody has feelings as well.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I definitely deeply cared about him, but it was a different kind of thing for sure. Right. He wasn't open and honest about everything.
Right.
So
are you okay talking about that?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
So give us the brief rundown of what happened exactly, of that sort of relationship.
We were really close friends, and then we lived together.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to us moving in together, we were intimate. And then it just kind of progressed when he moved in with me.
Right. And did you ever have any discussions about exclusivity?
You know, actually, I don't think we ever did, to be honest. I just think it was one of those that just kind of happened. And I guess because there weren't really any boundaries that were really spoken of, we just kind of did our own thing, you know?
Mm.
If I wanted to go out with other guys, I did. And same thing with him and girls.
Yeah.
But yeah, after a while, it did get really, really confusing because I cared about him as a best friend. And then down the road, I was kind of like, well, you know, maybe I could see myself dating him. I cared very, very much for him.
Yeah,
and I told him that, and he said the feelings weren't the same. So I don't know. It was just kind of a confusing time period.
So you told him you could date him. He said didn't feel the same way. Right. And then what happened next?
We still had our intimate relations, and then it just kind of the friendship kind of just went downhill from there for a few personal reasons, I guess, with him and hooking up with some other people that weren't supposed to.
You weren't supposed to, or he wasn't?
He wasn't supposed to. Yeah, that's kind of where a lot of it started to go downhill.
Right. I think ultimately, though, it comes back to that there were no boundaries set. There was no discussion about what were you okay with and what weren't you okay with. And this, I think, is relationship styles in general, whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, or wherever you are on that sliding scale. You got to express what you're comfortable with and what you're not comfortable with, right? Ultimately.
Exactly.
And oftentimes I think that's the problem with monogamy. Not that there's a problem with monogamy in and of itself, but the problem is being in monogamous relationships just out of expectation and obligation without really thinking, is this really what I want? Or is there a better working situation out there for me? And most people never really contemplate that.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But where do you stand now? Because, as I said, there was a time, and, you know, talk from your standpoint about our relationship. Was there a time where you felt confused? Did you feel that I led you on? Did you feel as though you wanted more? Or how do you feel?
Well, I mean, I think at first it was a little confusing because I was still trying to figure out what I wanted. Because I have told you I haven't been in an exclusive relationship in a very long time now. So I guess it was kind of hard for me to figure out what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I developed feelings for you because you're awesome. Who doesn't love Nigel? But I think also I know I'm not one to rush into a relationship.
Mm.
So I think it was a little bit of a battle for me to figure out, well, how is this going to work? Because, of course, the terminology, again, it was still new for me.
But you're talking everything from your standpoint, from how you felt, what you were looking for. I'm talking about in terms of what I did. Because I'm trying to live a conscionable life. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
like girls. I love girls.
Right.
I love everything about girls. And I want to interact in an authentic and positive manner with them. And if that means that I should never have sex with any girls because they're going to get their heart broken, then I probably won't have sex with any girls. But I don't think that's the case. I think there is a way of being honest and authentic and saying, this is who I am and this is what I want. And yes, some people that won't fit and they'll have the opportunity and go, okay, thanks, let's just be friends. And I'm perfectly okay with that.
Right.
But I want to make sure I'm doing that in the right way. So do you feel in any way that I was duplicitous or?
I think it was, like I said, our relationship was a little weird starting out because I think we were both trying to figure out a lot of those things.
Mm.
So I think when we did finally have those conversations about what you were looking for, you didn't really want a girlfriend. I understood that. And I think also, I mean, it was kind of just step by step, really, for us, just trying to figure out, do we want to tell each other about if we've been with other people? Right. Or we're doing the don't ask, don't tell,
See, this is the interesting thing. When we tried to have these sort of discussions, for the longest time, we had this notion that if we were going to be together in an intimate way, we shouldn't be with anybody else in an intimate way within, I think it was 48 hours. I think I said 24, you said 48, and it was something like that. And we lived by that. At least I certainly did. And then there was one time where, because I remember, and again, you know, forgive me if my recollection here is wrong, but I remember you being not jealous overtly, but what it seemed to me was that you were expressing jealousy in a way without being overtly jealous. So I'll give you an example. I remember early times where we hadn't talked in a few days and you said, hey, let's have a chat or whatever else, and I would be busy doing a few things and I literally only had 10 minutes to talk to you because I was about to get a train. I said, I've only got 10 minutes, but let's have a chat. I remember you being sort of very angry about that because you felt as though I was making you second or third place and I couldn't find the time for you. And literally, I had so much else on my plate then that literally most of my friends I didn't talk to for 2 or 3 weeks. So I was literally trying to go out of my way to find 10 minutes to talk to you as much as I could.
During some of those, it was just kind of the way you worded it to me in my head at the time.
And a lot of that was text, you see.
Right, you're right.
Again, to have these conversations via text, very, very difficult. And again, long-distance relationships. That's the issue. Long-distance relationships, it's very hard to make work, whether they're monogamous, polyamorous, or whatever it is.
Right.
You know, just to have that level of communication. So there were times where I felt, okay, there's more to this than what she's saying. And it was difficult to really have that conversation when you're not face-to-face, you know?
Right.
And so there was the one time, and you were out in California at the time, and we'd had a big argument about something. Usually it was the same sort of thing, you feeling as though I wasn't making you important enough or wasn't respectful enough in how I'd sort of communicated, and then having a big blow up. And because I'm so sensitive about this sort of stuff, and that's perhaps an argument to why I do try to avoid deeply committed relationships, because I don't want to say I'm an empath, because I don't really believe I am in that sense, but I do feel emotions very strongly, especially when it's people that I care about and I love. And so when someone's upset, it's very difficult for me to just blow it off and carry on with my life. I want to resolve it as soon as possible. So there was one time where we'd had this big blow up and I'm like, right, fuck it. Okay, great. So I jump in my car and I drive like 90 minutes out to see you to resolve this. And I'm in the car and I'm like furious. I'm furious at myself as much as anything else. Because I'm like, I didn't want to get into a relationship. I don't want a girlfriend. This is why I don't want a girlfriend, because I don't want to get angry and have to do all this sort of grief. And I'm like, right, this is it. I'm not going to be friends anymore. I can't talk to you. I was driving out there expecting that I was just going to say, this is it. I don't want to ever see you again, because I was so angry, not with just with you, but with the situation that I'd allowed myself get into it, and that I had to cut it off because it was bad for my health. I mean, it really did fuck me up, you know. But nonetheless, we got there and we talked for a while and we kind of got to the bottom of things, and face to face, as is often the case, you sort of realize, okay, misunderstandings and text, the written word. And we got to the bottom of it, and we realized we still love each other deeply and care about each other and still want to be in each other's lives, but we can't keep having these blow-ups because it will kill me. And I think that was kind of a turning point, certainly.
I think so.
But what was funny was after that, you saying, okay, great, now we're back on good terms, let's make out. And me sort of going, well, actually, I can't do that. And you're like, why not? I said, well, because I've made out with someone else in the last 48 hours. And it could have gone many different ways at that point.
Yeah.
Because I've been, in the past, I was in a long-distance monogamous relationship, and you could say I was doing it out of obligation. There was certainly a portion of that. Did I love her? Yes. Was I very attracted to her? Yes. Did I think it would ever work out? Absolutely not. But I did it because I just had my heart torn apart when I got divorced and I met this girl and I was like, I can't break somebody else's heart, so I'm just going to try and make this work, even though I know deep down it never will.
Yeah.
And I'd been open with her and I said, I don't want a relationship, I just got divorced, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, okay, no problems. And then she came over for a week And when she left at the airport, we were waiting for her flight for her to go through. And she said, I just need to know, is there anybody else like me? And at the time, I was seeing somebody else. Now, I could have very easily said, no, there's no one else like you, because it was a different sort of relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, I still loved the other girl deeply, cared about her a lot. So perhaps it was a very similar relationship. I don't know. I mean, all I know is the girl in Italy really wanted to be in a committed relationship with me, and the other girl I was seeing was perfectly okay accepting me as me. And so, of course, which one did I choose?
Yeah.
The one that...
Difficult.
Exactly. But I remember distinctly, I'll never forget it as long as I live, I remember turning to her and saying yes. Because the week before, the other girl had asked me, because I told her I had a friend coming over from Italy who was staying with me for a week, and she said, are you going to sleep with her? And I said yes. And she said, okay, I appreciate you being honest with me, but you've been honest with me all along. So while I am a little bit jealous, I can't get mad, because you told me. And I thought, oh, holy shit, this is fantastic. This can work.
Right.
Until I told the Italian girl, and it literally looked like I'd stabbed her in the heart with a knife. I will never forget just the...
Now, did she know about this other girl prior to that?
No.
Maybe that's why.
Right. She just... Yeah. I think oftentimes when you say to a girl, I don't want anything serious, I've just had my heart broken, et cetera, as guys often do, that they go, okay, that doesn't mean they're seeing anybody else. That doesn't mean that in amount of time, if they start to feel feelings for me, they'll want to be with me. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's just,
yeah,
there's too
tricky.
Much open to conjecture. But anyway, I told her and she was absolutely devastated. She said, I'm the most horrible person she's ever known. And that she'll never see me again, and I'll never see her again. And she went through, and I was absolutely devastated. I mean, this was however many months after getting, you know, divorced and going through all that as well.
Yeah.
And then she missed her connection, texted me, had to come back out, spent another day with me, where we could barely even say a word to each other.
Brutal.
It was, I had a studio apartment. We sat there all night. Like, it was one of the most awkward, horrible, agonizing nights of my life.
Yes.
And in the end, I mean, I broke down and I cried and I said, you've got to understand why I feel this way. And I can't just get into a relationship because you want to be in a relationship and blah, blah, blah. And I told you this from the beginning. And why didn't you listen to me? Oh, my fucking word. Like,
sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. You could understand why. Yeah. I've sort of suffered a lot of emotional. And the truth is, it was my own doing.
Right.
There's no one else to blame. The fact of the matter is, early on, when I felt like she wanted more, I could have very easily said no.
Yeah.
This is going in the wrong direction. I don't want what you want, and I'm sorry. But I was weak, and human beings sometimes are weak,
well,
you know?
Well, I mean, I have noticed you are a people pleaser, and you don't like to deal with confrontation, so you do kind of do things out of obligation, not even just with girls, but with your friends as well. You don't feel like doing something, but you feel bad, so you go out to that bar or whatever it is, and you don't feel like doing it, but
right.
You do it anyway.
Yeah.
I think you've gotten better with that, though.
I think so, too. I think so, too, and I'm much better at it now, and I do believe that it's important to give people the choice.
Right.
And let them make that choice and live with it.
Right.
And say, ultimately, and this may sound selfish, I don't think it is, ultimately, you're only responsible for your own happiness. Should you be duplicitous? Should you lie? Absolutely not. You should be honest and upfront with people. But if you are, and then they choose to ignore that, then some of that has to lie on them. If I could go back now, when she got super upset and she eventually left, I should have said, this is never going to get better. This is never going to work.
Right.
I love you. I wish the world was a different place, but this now ends.
Mm-hmm.
And cut off, and as awful as it was, and however many terrible things she may have said, I should have cut it off at that point. I didn't. And I went another 6 to 8 months of suffering trying to make this relationship work, which just destroyed me. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to get into the details now. There's no point to. But it absolutely fucking destroyed me. And so I know that now. You know, it's taken me.
I think we all have to go through those periods so you do know not to do that again.
Maybe you're right. But so to go back to the original point, when I told you I'd made out with somebody, you know, in the last 24 to 48 hours, it could have gone in that same direction. Right. You could have freaked the fuck out or whatever else. But I think we were at a different stage of the relationship. And of course, I wasn't saying that I'd slept with somebody else either, you know.
Right.
I mean, that was the difference.
Well, yeah, making out definitely different for one. But I think also because of the whole situation and it was just so angry and whatnot, I kind of felt like, well, let's get the makeup because... And I think also for me, to some degree, after we just kind of laid all the cards on the table... And we're open about everything and what we want, what we don't want, and what we would prefer, what we're comfortable with. It was kind of a turn on, I guess, for me that we were so open and honest. So to me, at that point, I was like, I don't really care what you did the night before. Like, you're mine right now. Like,
right.
You know what I mean?
So I've experienced the same thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't, because a lot of people never get to that stage because it's scary.
It is,
to throw
sure.
it out there and risk rejection. I think it's more scary for girls because guys are way more likely to call you a slut, to say,
it
you know,
is.
You fucking bitch, like you don't really love me if you're willing to be with somebody else. It's almost expected for guys to be with other girls, you know what I mean?
Right,
so
right.
To me, non-monogamy, polyamory, whatever label you want to place on it, I don't even believe in any labels, I think is more an evolution of female sexuality than it is of men's.
I think so.
Thank you, Ange. Tune in next week for more ramblings about my unconventional life and the second part of the interview with Ange, with some good stuff about the nature of non-monogamous relationships and people's reactions to them.
But it's just kind of like, you say that you're monogamous and you only want one person.
That's what guys say, because they've been taught that's how to get girls to sleep with them. Most girls don't want to hear that you're non-monogamous. They want to think
guys
that,
I don't even think want to hear it.
Agreed.
Either necessarily.
Agreed. I think that's a very fair point as well. I'll see you then. Well, that is it. Another week on this earth. Another blessing. Thank you for listening and being part of my journey. Drop me a line if you have a comment or question, or if you think you know someone who'd be a good parenting partner for me. If you like the show, help spread the word, write a review, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher so you don't miss an episode. I will be back next week, but until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, be kind and happy. Let love rule. Hello.